Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss the Book of Boba Fett, currently airing on Disney+. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined in our traversal of these episodes, following in the footsteps of Boba Fett, by my co-host, Tony Sindelar, is here. Hi, Tony.
Hello, nerds. Hello, Dan. Hello, other soon-to-be-named panelists.
Smooth is back there, right there. Kat Benish is also here. Hi, Kat.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Tony. I am the yet-to-be-named panelist. And I got nothing witty to say tonight. Well, I mean, right, not in this moment, but I'll just stop there.
Nailed it.
We'll check in with you later.
We are here to discuss the latest episode of the Book of Boba Fett, in Chapter 4, The Gathering Storm, in which the storm gathers. For our super brief overview of this episode, most of the first half to two-thirds takes place in our flashback timeline, and we see the story of how Boba Fett rescues Fennec Shand and gets her patched up with cyborg parts so that she can help him retrieve his ship from Jabba's palace.
Can I ask a technical question? When the flashbacks are actually longer than the main storyline, does that actually make them the main storyline of what we're really doing, or flash forwards?
This is an interesting question. I think we're going to get into it in a minute.
How does time work?
I have some thoughts. Yeah, I mean,
what is the definition of a flashback?
Do you want? Are you suggesting we should instead cover the riveting to mid 2010 series Flash Forward?
Dan, you know you watched that show.
I did watch that show.
I don't think I missed that.
Oh man. Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
Okay. It's mainly because you go back and you look and you're like, oh my God, this guy was in it and that person was in it and that person. It's just a litany of people that you knew from other stuff.
Let's just get our flash forward content out of the way here. Dan, that show where everyone like passed out and then they wake up later?
Yeah.
Or is that a different show?
No, that's the one. That's the one.
It was, correct me if I'm wrong, it is from that era where Lost was popular, and so
it's the
every other show. Yeah. There was a dark age post-Lost where it was like, how do we do spooky things, but also we don't have a good idea?
That's how we got to the La Brea tar pits that are out there right now?
I have heard recaps of that show that make it sound like a thing I'll never watch, but a thing I enjoy that other people are watching. So, yeah.
Anyways, this has been our flash forward podcast inside of the Book of Boba Fett podcast.
Yep. Kind of a flashback given when that show aired.
Fett and Fennec basically break into Jabba's palace, and they manage to steal his ship back. They go looking for his armor inside the Sarlacc pit. It doesn't go well.
It's a series of bad decisions. Also, I do want to, not right now, but do you want to talk about the timeline for all this? Because it basically implies that the ship has been sitting in Jabba's palace for 5 years.
Yeah, someone runs it like around the block once a week just to keep it
fresh. They give it an oil change.
They've talked about this in Car Talk. You need to run it, though, for at least 30 minutes. Otherwise, you're actually doing damage.
Yeah, got to charge those batteries up. Back in the present, Boba Fett is fully healed from his back-to-tank excursions. He goes down to the bar and finds Kersantan, the Wookiee, beating up a bunch of Trandoshans even after the bar owner tries to talk him down.
And does nothing. Let's be very clear. The man who's supposed to protect the town just stands there and watches.
Yeah, well, you know. He hires Kersantan because this is basically what Boba Fett does now. He's on a bit of a hiring spree. He then calls in all the other crime bosses, sits them down to dinner, and basically tries to convince them that they need to team up against the Pikes. And then at the end, basically convinces them to remain neutral, if not help him. And then he tells Fennec that he needs some muscle. That's where we leave off. We'll get there in a second. I see you're ready to jump in.
I got some thoughts
there? You want to start at the end?
I mean, it's the most exciting piece. I will say, high level, I thought this was a great episode. I enjoyed it. It felt to me far more in the vein of The Mandalorian. And I think part of it was like, one continuous story for most of the episode and stuff. And again, I think we're talking about, I've enjoyed the first three, just been a little, not what I was expecting, but bold choices, but like things happened there were, and it felt like they were being driven by a motivation, not just because we have to go move the plot and meet the mod. So I really like this episode, but it ends with, we got to go get some friends and hire some friends. And what do they play in the Mandalorian theme song?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lots of questions. Will we see Din Djarin? Will we see the rest of the Mandalorian crew?
Starbuck.
Yeah, Star Trek. That's canonically their name.
We don't actually. We've never seen Boba Fett interact with other Mandalorians, so that raises an interesting.
It does raise an interesting question.
We don't know how. Especially, I mean, I don't know him being a clone and not raised in Mandalorian society. I mean, he is in some ways connected. He has through dialogue in the Mandalorian established that he considers himself a Mandalorian. But do other Mandalorians consider him a Mandalorian?
We've delved into this a little bit in the past in terms of whether Jango was a Mandalorian and all that jazz. I also was curious about which Mandalorians were available for hire.
Sure.
Mandalorian for Hire, my new show coming this fall on Disney+. Because most of them, like, I feel like, and I'm totally now blanking on her name, what is Starbucks character's name? She's the sister
of
Bo-Katana.
Thank you.
Bo-Katana is Donatello Leonardo team up.
Yeah. For the listeners, they should know I'm really bad at remembering characters' names, so every single actor is basically reduced to like one character that I remember them in, and then there's at least six actors I just know all as Tom Holland. But
it's not a bad system. It's very efficient. So
you should have just gone with Chris, though. I mean, they're all named Chris, basically. Anyway, I don't really know where we're going with that, but I'm interested. I mean, maybe they Pedro Pascal to pop in for an episode to help out. But like, maybe I'm wondering if they bring in that whole all his cronies from. Remember when they blow up all the Mandalorians very early in season one of the Mandalorian? All his buddies who are hiding out around the sewer.
The Death Watch guys.
Yeah. Maybe they'll all come back.
I mean, this is the broader Dave Filoni story, right? Of like the most interesting parts of Clone Wars, I thought, were always the Mandalorian time stories. And like, we clearly know there's a lot more going on there and where the Mandalorian ends up. And I don't know. I feel like maybe this is a backdoor to even more. I originally thought this was a one-off, had nothing to do with Mandalore, but it could be the beginning of more of that storyline. I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm being particularly coherent on this, but I was excited and surprised by that move.
Yeah, just those wind chimes was all you needed to be like, I'm in, I'm sold.
It turned out they just actually, it was a budget cut. They just needed music and they're like, we've got this just lying around.
Yeah.
But it was cool and they did it too, because I was even thinking about it, because at that point he's back in his armor and I don't remember being there before him, but it must have been. But he actually has the symbol of Mandalore on his shoulder very prominently. And I remember even focusing on that while he was talking. I was like, oh, I don't remember that being in his armor. It very well may have been. I just never noticed it. Yeah. But it was all cleaned up and like dead center in the frame.
Yeah, they did frame it. Yeah.
His armor, I mean, like it visually appears very different than it did in old Star Wars time in a way where, like, I mean, maybe it is intended to be symbolic. There is the weird thing where he looks different because it's like, I mean, I think the actor who's playing him is like kind of a bigger, wider person than the guy in the old Boba Fett armor. Yep. But he's also wearing it over the Tusken Raider robes,
yep.
which make it seem a little bit more even like
bulky,
football pads or something. But then, the way he looks in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, it's all like scuffed up, and it's like maybe it's all he needs to get the job done. But the way we see his armor in Book of Boba Fett is like, no, the presentation of it matters.
Well, it's interesting, too, because there's actually, I would argue, a third difference, which is I remember when he gets it back in The Mandalorian, that first episode where he shows up to help again in the prison break episode, or the episode where they have to like go into the Imperial facility on the little trucks.
Yeah.
It's like perfect. It has totally been redone, whereas now it's like dented up again and like a little more scuffed than it was in The Mandalorian, but not as scuffed as it was in like Return of the Jedi. So like we're heading back in that direction. And clearly he's been through some stuff even post getting the armor back. We just haven't seen exactly what that entails. Let's talk a little bit about the timeline, because I think this is an interesting thing that we sort of alluded to is... most of this episode does take place in the past, and I think I turned to you, Kat, at one point and said, like, I kind of feel like maybe they should have just done this in order rather than doing the flashback, like, mechanic. I don't think it gives you much.
I wonder about, like, the machete order of the Book of Boba Fett. I mean, I like this episode in part because Fennec catches, I guess the timeline catches up to Fennec Shand, and he is there, and they have, you know, they don't exactly like do a lot of feeling sharings, but they have a couple of conversations, and she questions him as to like his rationale and motivations, and he explains his rationale and motivations, which we had sat through basically 3 hours of TV without ever having. And, you know, I mean, they have the conversation about like, I want to be a boss now, I'm sick of working for idiots, I think I'm smarter than them. and you should come along and help because you're smart and good at this job. And we should do this together, and I would be more loyal to you than anyone who employed you ever would. And that would be a good thing. And it's like, okay, I wish we had had some glimpse of that somewhere in the three episodes previous, because like it kind of works. It was just we had to headcanon that.
Yeah, we had to infer it. Yeah.
And that's a lot to infer. And it, you know, it kind of works for me that he's like, I'm done working for idiots. So I want to do something new. And also, there's the he wants a tribe, right?
Yeah.
There's the I'm done working for idiots. Also, I have gone as far as I can go as a solo person, right? I need like the Tusken Raiders both taught him how to survive in Tatooine, but also that like he needs to, you know, the value of family. Whereas he lived, it seems like you get the feeling as an independent from probably teens till. Till Sarlacc Pit.
I like that this is basically Boba Fett pitching a startup. Tatooine 2.0. Can I interest you in? I mean, we both laughed because there was that scene where it's like, I'm going to give you something you've never. I could give you something you never had before. Healthcare.
Yeah, and there was the moment at the dinner where again, Fennec is a great like front man. She's doing all the talking and explaining. He just sits
hype
there.
Hype man.
Thank you. Exactly. But there is also, I don't think they intended this. This way, but it is definitely a little funny. They're like, hey, I hate working for horrible bosses, but he's yet to prove himself to be competent as a manager.
But I think, you know, I mean, she clearly, I mean, yeah, I think he's given her a good deal where basically they're partners, and she gets to write her own job description. She has equity. She has a lot of equity. And also probably free. I mean, I guess it's to me, there was the kind of implied freedom of like, if I'm not, you know, if you don't like it, you can
walk away.
Leave.
Yeah.
You can walk away. I'm not going to, you know.
Her motivations make, I think, complete sense. Sense to me. And I think that's what I really enjoyed of like, we'd done a lot of guesswork and finally be like, oh, okay. Like, we finally have a stake in the ground.
Yes.
We understand this, right? We don't have to guess about it. I do wish that scene had been much earlier. I do think if it played out linearly, I actually think there could be a lot of fun tension right now of like, will they or won't they, or the Pikes, but
there was kind of in my head a question about timeline, and I guess it doesn't matter, but it bothers me of this. Theoretically, 5 years has passed, right?
Yes, we discussed this too.
And where are those 5 years, right? Did he spend some of those 5 years in the Sarlacc pit? Did he spend some of those 5 years like wandering around on that Bontha? Did he spend a couple days with the Tusken Raiders, or did he spend like a season with them? So it kind of feels to me like there's somewhere in there there's a 5 years between, you know, him falling in the Sarlacc pit and Fennec Shand. That I guess it doesn't matter, but it bothers me that I don't know where that is.
Yeah.
It's gotta be with the Raiders, because there's no way he could be in the Sarlacc pit for like a year and basically not have died from, you know, thirst. Starvation and thirst, if nothing else.
In Return of the Jedi, right, don't they say basically it keeps you alive for 1,000 years while it digests you slowly?
Cat, I'm so just gonna like, say, Jabba the Hutt is not a doctor. If he is your doctor, seek alternative care. He's not a scientist.
You have no idea whether or not he's a scientist. He could be a scientist. He's incredibly respected in his field.
He's slightly above Doctors Phil and Oz. Let's put it that way.
So he can run for office.
Okay, all right. Kat, is this what you want? This is the headcanon you want? Is that the weird Sarlacc pit like injects something with you such that it keeps you alive while slowly digesting the solid parts of you so that you do take forever.
I just know A plus B
the whole time.
A plus B must equal C, right? So A is the time we spent in the Sarlacc pit, B is the time we spent with the Tusken Raiders, and C is actually the time he spends on his new Bantha friend. And really,
yes,
this really is becoming a Star Wars version of Creatures Great and Small. But A plus C, B plus C must equal 5 years. So whatever headcanon you want, somewhere in there has to 5 years. So we spend 5 years like learning how to use a gaffa stick, which is possible, or he spent like 3 years injected by an embalming liquid in the Sarlacc.
And I guess it's mainly if it's with the Tusken Raiders, why didn't that feels like a mistake story wise to not show us, I guess. But whatever. I mean,
I'm still workshopping my pitch for the Disney Plus series about Jabba and medical school.
Mm. Well, there is some medical stuff in this. He is, after, I guess this is his, what, I don't know. He's been sleeping in a Bacta tank for maybe a week, and he is now healed. His skin is not as scarred as it was. But I kind of wondered, so his skin's all messed up from the acid, the digestive acid of the Sarlacc
pit. That seems
pit,
to be the suggestion, yes.
Yeah.
Which he then waits, like, 5 years to seek medical help for, which seems like not a good way to live. But, yeah.
Hey, healthcare is expensive.
I mean, he needs to get in there. Yeah, I agree. There's some questions to that. I mean, it did seem to me as though he was spending more time.
Maybe they don't matter, but it seems like the show should have cared at some point.
Yeah, I you could show somebody with the Tusken Raiders for a while. It's just, it's unclear to us how long he's there, right? Because it's kind of, we go in and we go out. So, mm-hmm. You know, he joins the tribe, he has the attack on the train, all that stuff. And it's like, it feels like from the time we are watching elapse, it feels like a week or two, but it's maybe
like
a month. A
couple months. I'd put a couple months.
But even so,
doesn't feel like years.
It doesn't feel like years.
But well, and especially it feels like he is their captive. The train comes along and he proves that he can, you know, be one of them. And then like he goes to accept his payment from the Pikes the next day and they all get killed.
I agree with that.
It feels like he's not one of them for very long.
True, although there's always still more flashbacks. But I think the question is, does it matter that we don't know?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So it's some combination of that. We now know he doesn't leave Tatooine, that there is no broader arc there, but it's, that's not what I meant, but like that's essentially the storyline, is those three parts that get him to find Fennec Shand. Yeah.
I had a question, maybe Tony, you picked up on this during the conversation he has with Fennec in the past. He mentions getting revenge on somebody who double-crossed him. I was not entirely clear.
And he seemed to kind of imply that it might even be Bib Fortuna.
Yes.
But that didn't
right?
really make any sense.
That did. I didn't get that. I was like, who? Yeah. I was like, who double-crossed you? I thought you just fell into a Sarlacc pit. Gravity? Are you out to get gravity?
I think the argument I can believe is it would be the Pike leader who double-crossed him. But even there, like the way he describes him is such a familiar frustration or hatred, it feels like it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, this raises a much bigger question, Tony, which I'm sure you want to weigh in as well, is how did Max Rebo survive Jabba's sailboat explosion?
Yeah. It was a very localized explosion.
Okay. I mean, I go back and watch that explosion. I think you'll change your opinion.
No, it's two explosions.
It's not good.
It's a movie explosion.
Yeah.
I don't, maybe Max, I mean, I'm trying. Max Rebo is possibly the only survivor of the Max Rebo band.
Is it possible Max Rebo is immortal and invulnerable? And this is just how he felt. Like Max Rebo walks out of the desert with a flaming sail barge behind him.
Dan, I will not read your Max Rebo Highlander fanfiction. But allow me to propose an alternative fanfiction in which Max Rebo has a pod, protective escape pod concealed in his
little piano.
Piano?
Yes. Piano. All right.
Well,
I'm on board.
Dan, you know, he's got a great writer for his band, and hey, his name, it's his name. And
sure.
Sorry, Droopy McCool, you're burnt up.
We also have no idea. Like, maybe his skin is flame retardant. Like, there's lots of different options here, right?
It doesn't. Very few people have explosive retardant skin. That's the tricky thing, you know?
Well, I think we can all agree, rip size noodles.
So, Dan, are you waiting for the spinoff series where we find out Max Rebo climbs out of the Sarlacc pit?
And the book holds his fist up. The book of Max Rebo coming next fall?
It's more like a pamphlet. and then he wanders into Mos Espa and gets a job.
We're able to say then, I think, thinking back to the motivation, right? So, and thinking about the dinner scene where he cuts the deal / like cuts them in on a timeshare, is to
dinner above a Rancor pit. I thought that was fun.
That was a baller move, I'm gonna say.
Yeah,
that
no,
was pretty good.
I enjoyed that it was already basically kind of a Godfather-esque gangster scene, and Fennec Shand is doing all the talking, and we have a Rancor right below us who
impeccable timing.
punctuation, emoting.
He's learned one skill, and it's how to interrupt dinner parties.
Yeah.
But I like that, his motivation is, he basically wants to become an entrepreneur, right? He
wants to be his own boss.
Wants to be his own boss. He doesn't really care about power. He just wants to be a place where he can, be a job creator for the local community, not get in the way of other people, make sure there are safe streets, and doesn't want world domination. He just wants a quiet slice of Tatooine.
Also, he's really upset about the fact that they're all, the Pikes are coming in to, skim all the value off Tatooine.
Don't know what
and
that
no one,
was.
Still, we continue to not know what the value of Tatooine is.
Yeah, or exactly how the spice trade works. I assume they're importing spice?
They must just be selling it. Okay, here we go. Ready?
Okay. I got a
proposal.
Spice comes from mines.
Spice comes from the mines of Kessel, but here's the thing. Tatooine is such a terrible place to live. There are a high number of people using spice because it's just so miserable that they're trying to escape their everyday life. So it's a really big market for people who want to buy spice.
How many people do you think live on Tatooine?
20.
I don't know. There's apparently a thriving mod community that this episode has now established is not just a thing that gets mentioned in one Star Wars episode, but gets mentioned in others, which I just want to say, if I am ever dying, please, please do not take me to the Star Wars equivalent of a tattoo shop. Please take
me. I will do that in writing, I mean, Tony.
It is
in writing.
Is like, it is like a step down from, like, you've got, you know, you've got legitimate healthcare. You've got, like, doctor who has a drug addiction problem and it is in it to the, for the mob. Sketchy
forget,
veterinarian.
Like vet.
And then I did not know there was a level below this. This episode introduced me to the fact that there's Chop Shop. Chop Shop is the level of healthcare below vet that is available.
I will be honest, I was actually a little sad there weren't more of the mods. I've come to really love them. There was enough mods.
It's kind of funny that it's like this was not a thing that was seemed like a big deal before that is apparently a big deal now. Whatever. I also don't totally understand what they did to her to Fennec Shand's guts in terms of cybernetic replacement.
They turned them into robo guts.
Okay, it just it's seems clear. Like That's a lot clear. Of moving parts for what I am not used to thinking as a relatively static part of the human.
Tony, this is Star Wars. This is not Star Trek.
I know. That's true.
Yeah, I don't. It was the only thing available. I also like that after getting her patched up, it looks like he takes her back to the scene of her death so that when she wakes up, she won't be confused.
yeah. Just
very
they have some good chats over their little campfire eating burnt rats.
I really enjoyed also the planning and the follow through. Her being like, I'll go along for the ride for your vendetta campaign. You know, and they don't talk much. He just like goes through these actions and she's like, this was a good idea. Just, you know, rafing or strafing all the riders. And then when he goes to the Sarlacc pit, like, do you think he told Fennec, like, hey, we're going to go over the Sarlacc pit. We're going to go down there. I'm going to find my Beskar armor. Or just like show up and lean over. She's like, wait, what are we doing? Because if I were her, I would have gotten off the ship at that point.
I think it was one of those not really knowing. I was, as they were doing that, I was like, oh, they changed the Sarlacc pit. It doesn't have the beak that it had when they redid the
exactly
Return of the
what
Jedi,
Dan
which
said.
Is CGI. And it's like, it does have, it still has it a beak.
We knew they weren't going to be able to decanonize that. Yeah, I assume the lower and lower they get, I just kept being like, wait for the jump scare. It's coming. Mm. We have that moment is coming. But it does feel like I have some how far can you put the ship into the Sarlacc pit? Like,
they
it's
kind
very
of avoided
big.
Showing us that. I mean, the ship was not going to get pulled into the Sarlacc pit, but the ship was going to be put in a very dangerous position.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I think they maybe needed a better like establishing shot to show us what that looked like.
I agree. They did a little bit of it later on to sort of give you a pullback. But you know, it felt a little bit, I'm not going to say.
It was hard because it was like, how in peril are they? And it's like, you're inside a spaceship, but you are also really close to a giant monster.
That might eat your spaceship.
How good
possible.
Is that? Yeah. Well, it's not going to eat the whole spaceship, but it only needs to open up that cockpit to eat you to, you know, for this to be bad.
Yeah.
How good is that space glass?
Well, and there's the question of sort of like, we debated, I guess he doesn't remember the Jawas
taking his armor.
Because he is sort of conscious, but he's way out of it, right? So he thinks he just crawled right out of his armor.
He thinks the armor's still in there.
I don't really know how the logic was it felt a little bit like we just needed an excuse to go back to the Sarlacc pit to me.
It felt like he settled a lot of debts in this episode, right? He blew up the biker gang. I didn't think they necessarily needed to kill the Sarlacc creature. It's you know, kind of just a natural phenomenon. But nope, they dropped a bomb into it.
One of those Attack of the Clones, clones bombs. That's from episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had to put that in. And then we also...
Some droids have been murdered.
Yes.
The droids were great.
A sous-chef has fallen. I believe is a former torture.
Yeah, that was that another 99? Because we saw one...
If it's not... I don't know if it's the same one, but it's the same kind of head.
We saw one in The Mandalorian who was running the cantina. When Din Djarin showed up there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess maybe that's just a common model. Maybe Jawa bought them in bulk.
Yeah, it's an all
some of them were torture,
service,
some of them were kitchens. Service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did love the chef droid with all the knives. I thought that was
General
hilarious.
Grievous,
yes, exactly. Yeah, I was
and
a big fan of that.
Unnecessarily cute rat catcher droid.
Yes.
That droid looked familiar to me, too. I couldn't place it. You do see him later.
There's a bunch of them in Clone Wars. They're
okay.
Think of them animated. They're kind of,
yeah,
you know,
that's why.
Dumpy.
The little
with
ears.
And they're fin. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, I don't know. It was, I enjoyed it. I think, you know, what worked for A, it was much more coherent. It was kind of a simpler mm-hmm. story than any of the stuff they tried to do before. We got a lot of Fennec Shand, and, you know, I think Ming-Na Wang does a great job as Fennec Shand. So,
yeah.
That was good. Of course, the Wookiee came back, which it almost felt like why they even did the thing where the Wookiee was heavily featured in the previously
yes.
on. It was like, in case you were unconscious during.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did think that the scene in the casino, though a bit long, like she, you know, so she spends a long time like trying to talk him down and flatter him and all this stuff. Yep. And eventually he's just like, nah, and he still
rips
the transmission's arm off. Which I thought was dark, but funny, because he's just like, nah, that's just what I do. And we don't really, I mean, that's one that also doesn't, there's not a lot of background there unless you know that Wookiees and Trandoshans hunt Wookiees and they really hate each other and all that. Like, it doesn't, he's not given a lot of motivation for why he suddenly decides to attack all of them. It kind of comes out of nowhere. Because he's just sitting there and drinking and brooding. but I still liked it, even if it felt like a little bit, again, it's not really, it's moving us along so that Boba Fett can hire him, but it doesn't really
weird.
Do a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little weird because it's like, you could have just hired him when you let him go.
Yes, exactly.
And it was a little bit like, we're back at this. I mean, I'm assuming there's going to be more stuff in this bar casino because this is the third time we've been here now. The first time anything has actually happened, and it was pretty trivial. So, seems like we're leading up to some, you know, that this being some kind of set piece or something, right? Like, why do we keep going here? Which feels, maybe you didn't need to do that. I kind of wondered, it's also weird because it's like, we're watching the scene that Boba Fett is watching. Boba Fett is watching the Book of Boba Fett. We were watching it with him. And I was kind of thinking, like, he's kind of evaluating Kirsten as our Kirsantan as a fighter, and I maybe also kind of evaluating the casino runner as a negotiator. And it was like, are possibly both of them applying for jobs, but they don't realize it.
Did he not get to evaluate him as a fighter when he kicked the crap out of him last week?
He was a little distracted.
Yeah. I was like, do you need to see him tear the arm off of somebody to be, you know? I mean, I guess things have changed in terms of his priorities, but it was like, he was in your house, dude. You could have hired him then.
So I will offer a counterpoint in that I actually think that scene was probably, it was just like, there was a moment that I loved, the same way that I think that first episode of like, with Jessica Biel, there's some of the best acting is actually
Jennifer Biel.
Thank you, Jennifer Biel. Again, the names, they're
very different people.
So bad at names. The Wookiee, the moment where she is telling him that everyone used to love you because you were wrathful and rage and you could fight so well, and that was like held up on a pedestal and that's why you won all the accolades. But now when people see that, now they look on it with horror. And the Wookiee responds to that, and like he sees himself as others see him as a monster. And that moment where his eyes get very sad and he kind of looks down, again, it's a brief moment, but that was really resonating. I think it did go with the broader story of that Fennec and the Boba also have about the fireplace, which is kind of the question of what future do bounty hunters have in this new world, post-Empire, in the New Republic, with like increased civilization and that like we're going towards a world where we're not going to have battle pits with bounty hunters or gladiators fighting against each other. But what place do these folks now have in that moment transition? I thought there kind of might have been a little long, but I still think that was actually a really nice moment because it played into the broader theme of all these now new outcasts. What happens to them?
That's an interesting point. I mean, he does sort of decide in the end to be a monster anyways, it seems like. It's kind of what he's like, oh, this is what I know. But it is interesting in terms of, like you said, Boba Fett trying to cobble together an alliance of not just the crime families, but also all these people who are, like you said, like him, trying to figure out how to make their way in the world today.
Yeah.
And just like,
takes everything you
yep,
got.
Various people.
You know, we're a couple years post the fall of the Empire, or at least the destruction of the Death Star. It seems like things are still chaotic, right? Like, there's a lot of people out of work, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Things are, you know, you're not being ruled by totalitarians, but also maybe things are not stabilized yet, and maybe things are especially weird on the Outer Rim, where lots of crime bosses are now fighting over everything, because they don't even, you know, the Republic doesn't have, is not doing any kind of policing of them, because they're not established enough to. So yeah, it seems like there's all kinds of weirdos floating around that yeah. could be future employees.
He's making a melting pot of weirdos. Yeah. I wanted to also point out, I really did love the scene where they're infiltrating Jabba's palace, but it did throw into sort of stark relief for me again that Fennec Shand seems very, very competent and capable, and Boba Fett at times seems kind of bumbling.
Yeah, it is weird. I feel like this, I think one of the things that this show is perhaps redefining, and it's weird because the first time we saw Boba Fett in The Mandalorian was like,
a badass. Let
me show you him murdering all of your Lego minifigs in existence. just throw him in a blender, and then he'll blow up a ship with his rocket, you know? But it seems like perhaps this show is redefining that, like, he has a very narrow skill set. And, like, he is a good hand-to-hand fighter, and he was a good bounty hunter, but maybe not the best tactician, maybe not the best pilot, maybe not the best warlord, you know.
Maybe
he is
not the best droid catcher, you know.
Not, you know, no, he is not. Yeah, that scene almost felt like comic mischief, and it was like, this is a little weird
for us. It was comic mischief, yes. And I was, like, sitting there going, are we doing Boba Fett doing comedy now? Is that, I mean...
Yeah, do you want to see Boba Fett do a pratfall, you know?
It's kind of like they can't, you know, I enjoy the show as well, I do, but I think they struggle a little bit with the tone of saying, like, we're going to make something that deals with crime and people mm-hmm. who are on the criminal elements, and not like your lovable scoundrels like your Han Solo and your Lando Calrissian, but like people who are kind of, if not, they're not evil necessarily, but they're definitely on the darker end of the spectrum. But they also are struggling with trying to keep it in the Star Wars vein
yeah.
where
yeah.
things are kind of light and like campy adventure
and
fun.
It's
and it's hard to do.
It is.
Yeah. And it's hard. I mean, I appreciate, I think, especially in this episode, the performance of Boba Fett, just like every time he says, I am Boba Fett, and
yes,
things like that.
Was he threatening the droid?
I was like, you know, and, you know, but it is like, this show wants to have its cake and eat it too, where he's going to chase a droid around a kitchen, kind of ridiculously, but then he's going to catch the droid and just say, I am Boba Fett, and the droid will shut himself down. So he is both bumbling in that he can't catch a little, you know, pathetic droid, and also... you know, his name strikes fear into the hearts of men, androids. So it kind of wants it both ways, which is tricky.
It's a hard line to walk.
The tone of it is confusing, right?
Yeah.
I think The Mandalorian season one had a much more defined tone. And the tone of the Book of Boba Fett is confused.
Yeah, because I think in The Mandalorian, a lot of it was playing, you know, The Mandalorian as kind of the straight man, and it was about him thawing out of a personality of somebody
and
who
Baby
was like...
Baby Yoda was our comic.
Yes.
Right.
And that worked really well, but trying to have... Now Fennec Shand is kind of the straight man, and Boba Fett is the comic relief, which is...
Yeah.
Or sometimes...
It's just odd.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of this will depend on kind of how they land the next few episodes. Like, is this about building it up into a point where it turns out that Boba Fett's strategy is actually good? He actually is making good plans?
No, I very much believe it could be. Like,
Is this the gut? Well, I don't know. I mean, you could see it all falling apart. Probably they don't want to kill off Boba Fett as a character because he's too marketable. He's got to sell his action figures. But his empire could be taken away. I don't know. We don't know. Is this story The Godfather, or is it like Scarface? How is this going to go for him?
I think that's a great question. It is a question of whether this is something that turns out like, yes, this is his calling. This is the origin story of how Boba Fett became the daimyo of Tatooine. Or is this the story about somebody who just can't quite figure out their place, and he's trying this and it's not going to work out for him, but he'll, you know, he escapes with his life maybe because he's a survivor, but it's not the story of him like moving on to the next chapter of, or at least this isn't the next chapter.
There's also the story where he's like successful and he's like, oh, this is actually a pain in the neck. Heavy is the hell that wears the Mandalorian hat. But you know, I don't think that's a Star Wars show story though.
That is still, though, the Star Trek TV show I want them to make is just, like, the Federation at home. Basically, like, Star Trek JAG, just dealing with all the issues that come up. It's okay. There'd be one viewer. No.
I would watch. I mean, you know.
Oh, it's like the New Republic paperwork show.
Exactly. There's, what, three more episodes?
Three more episodes.
Yeah. So, today was the halfway point.
This was
good.
I felt like we had been saying... they need to land something. Something needs to, you know, fit together. And they did a lot of that here.
It also seems like...
It moved briskly, too, in terms of the amount of people that are, nice, that are murdered pace. And debts are settled.
All family business. It does also seem like we're probably done with the flashbacks, since the back to tank is finished. And
seems like
we kind of caught up to where we are now. And we gloss over the whole getting the armor back because we saw that all in The Mandalorian. So it feels like we're kind of moving forward from now into like the next three episodes being really about what's going on in Mos Espa.
Yeah.
Is Boba Fett going to take over, et cetera?
You know, we've gotten these little bits of Mos Espa, right? Of present day Mos Espa, right? I mean, it feels like we've maybe basically got an episode's worth of present day. Bits between the last four. And now you're going to do three episodes of present day. I'm interested to see how that's going to work.
It also kind of explains now, too, why I think we were a little surprised that the mayor was so... We met him briefly, surprised that it was, I think, mostly a CG actor. It's like, oh, they'd... First episode, walked away feeling the mayor's going to be the big bad. And clearly that's not the case. Now it's the Pikes. But now that kind of makes some of the decisions in the first episode make a lot more sense.
Yeah, I go back again to like the idea of having to split between the flashbacks and the present day story. I mean, I can see why they wanted to roll in not just doing a linear thing in the sense that you needed to... They don't want to like have the show change necessarily to a different show four episodes in, where it's like, all right, the first three episodes about him hanging out with Tusken Raiders, and the last four are about him, you know... being a crime lord. You know, I can understand why they decided that wasn't right. I'm not convinced it was the correct decision, but I can see why they chose to do it that way.
They could have been like a freeze frame of like, oh, I bet you're wondering how I ended up here.
I almost wonder what it would have been like to see the flashbacks. We've had four chunks of flashbacks, to have those in reverse order. I don't know.
What do you mean, like going further and further back? So we start with...
Yes. Instead of starting with him climbing out of the pit, I was like, let's start with him rescuing Fennec Shand. And then let's go back before that. I don't know. That is an idea that I've not thought very far through.
Well,
I
think it has an interesting idea to it.
They really, really wanted to start the show with him climbing out of the Sarlacc pit, right?
Yes.
They
really wanted I think that was a big part. But then they didn't want to like go to the, like, you know, it's tricky because he introduced in getting him in the second season of The Mandalorian, and then bookending the end of the second season with that scene where he kills Bib Fortuna, which we saw this week again in flashback, is tricky because it means like, well, we've got to sort of thread the needle because we want to tell the story of everything prior to him showing up in The Mandalorian, but we also have a finite end to that. So we do want to also tell the story of after he meets the Mandalorian, and we need to somehow glue those together.
I think also if we had watched the first two episodes and it was just Boba Fett and the Sand People, I think we would have had a lot of questions about where is this going? Like, I think it is appealing. It's very attractive to go beginning to end, but that only works when we kind of know where we're going. I think we would have watched the first episode and a half like, this is the slowest, like... I don't even know how to describe this. Like, what is he doing?
I don't know. It would have been interesting. I'm not sure that it would have been better, but I'm
sure there'll be fans out there who recut it. So
yeah, but
you can
never see it again the first time. So
it's ineffable.
Dan, what if we raise people in an isolation tank and then expose them to
science demands
testing?
It's the only way to do it.
This is unethical.
This is another thing I can't get past a review board. Oh well.
That is one of the things too, is thinking about this versus the Mandalorian. It feels like there are no ethics.
Well, that's part of the issue, is like I said, like you're taking people who are sort of nominally bad guys, and you're discussing whether or not, like, this episode does not blink at the fact that he guns down all those bikers, right?
No, not at all.
Not at all. And, like, in fact, Fennec Shand gives him a little nod afterwards, like, yep,
yeah,
good for you.
Well,
I mean, Fennec Shand is an assassin, so it's not really a surprise there. But
an assassin who there's also a bounty on, which that seems like that's not a good way to do business.
Did we know that beforehand?
They don't really explain that.
Or I thought she was assuming that someone had put, like, I thought there wasn't necessarily a bounty on her. She just came to the logical conclusion that if someone was there, that it was just like, I will pay, you must be here because of the bounty or a bounty. Like, I'll pay you double. Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether there's a bounty, like, why else would there be someone there?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, but your point about the ethics, like, I don't.
No one here lives by a code.
But it feels like they should.
But the thing is, like, there's, and even the Tusken Raiders, right? I feel like we've gone pretty quick to avenge them, right? We killed the bikers and that's it. There's no. Yeah. And again, it's the show, like, but there was no sort of like, oh, great, now I can finally have that funeral pyre, or now I can finally put them to rest, or something. It's just like, nope,
I
have to avenge
water
them. Done.
To the Dune Sea, and it's like, nope, they're dead. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, but I think that there's an element of that too. He does make comments about, like, the Tusken Raiders were here before, and this is their planet, and, like, the rest of us are just hanging out here. And
the one thread that might still be hanging, they put a little tiny little pin on it, is he tells Fennec Shand about how the gang took out the Tusken Raiders, and she said, bikers took out the Tusken Raiders by themselves?
Oh, yes.
That seems unlikely.
Well,
so
that
there
goes
may still
back
be
to the fact,
probably the pikes are involved,
the
right?
Pikes.
I mean, who else? Yeah.
Well, that goes back to that thought that maybe it was the pikes who double-crossed them, right?
Yes, which makes more sense, but if he knows that, then why is he so surprised about the bike?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a little bit of slightly sloppy plotting in there, just in terms of who knows what when and what the motivations are. Still a little murky about certain things. I think some of this feels like it was cut together later and maybe they just lost some connective tissue or something. It's a little sparse at times. It's just a little muddy in there.
My generous headcanon was, Boba Fett in the past goes to the pikes and says, and the pikes say, we can't pay two people. My generous headcanon was that they had the same meeting with the bikers the previous morning and basically said, oh, we'd be happy to pay you money. You've come to collect. But also, now the Tusken Raiders are demanding money. By the way, their camp is here on this map.
Yeah,
right.
But this seems to imply that they would need something more.
Pikes usually travel single file to hide their numbers, so we'll never know.
They travel business class.
Business class to hide their numbers.
All
right. Well, any other last things to discuss before we wrap up here?
I am feeling more excited about, I was never going to quit on the show, but I'm feeling more excited about watching the next episodes and talking about them immediately after than I was last time. So that's good.
Yeah. I completely agree. I really enjoyed this. I mean, I think I mentioned, like, the third episode, it was a little wacky. But yeah, I'm wicked excited to see where this goes. It's fun. It's exciting. I'm excited to see which of the gang they bring back together. I'm still holding out that someday we're going to see Mara Jade in this universe, but I'm going to guess it's not in this show. And go kick some pike butt.
I'm not taking sides. I'm neutral. I'm with you both. I found this episode very engaging and very entertaining, even with all my nitpicks and questions. I still thought, as you guys, I think, accurately said, it was one of the most engaging of all the episodes so far. The plot moves along at a really nice clip. Boba Fett has people he can talk to who can talk back to him, which is handy in dialogue scenes.
It's okay. He'll still talk to a Bantha just to remind you of what the previous episodes were.
I did enjoy his bond with the Bantha and throwing him the Bantha the food. And, like, I was looking at him and was like, oh, man, it's Appa from the Avatar.
Yeah. It also shows, like, consistency. That isn't just the rancor. He likes, like, he connects with animals.
He's an animal person.
We just didn't know that. And that's, like, something new and nice to know about Boba Fett.
Oh, man. Next episodes, he's going to have his own Kowakian monkey lizard. It's going to be great.
thank you, Tony.
All right. Well, that is all we've got for this week's episode. I did want to mention we got a nice letter from listener Kat, not to be confused with co-host Kat, explaining their really in-depth thoughts on, like, where the show was going. And it was very interesting. We're not going to read the whole letter here, but I think... I wanted to thank them for sending in that email. And please send us your emails, acp@theincomparable.com. We enjoy reading them. And if you want to hit us up on Twitter, we're at @acp_cast. We really appreciate you listening. I'd like to, of course, thank my co-host for being here, Tony Sindelar. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure back at you. Goodbye, nerds.
Kat Benish, thank you for being here.
I literally have nowhere else to be right now.
That is great. High praise.
No, good night, all. Thanks so much.
If I could be anywhere else, she says, I would be there. But no, I'm here. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you next week.